is the Day Zero update for January 31st, 2016. I'm Filippo
Denofo. I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Chris Sologi.
We want him.
And yes, good, bit of a pretty interesting week this week. A lot of news to talk about. as far as the fighting game news goes, well, me and Pat have been playing Street Fighter V, and we have purpose in life.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Street Fighter V. The final beta is ending today, and, well, after that, we'll have about 2 weeks to wait for the actual final game to show up. So that's going to be pretty good.
Those 2 weeks are going to suck.
Yeah, they kind of will. No, we might as well jump into what we're playing since, like, kind of already started us in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Street Fighter V. It's there. It's definitely there now. And this last beta, great times. Yep, I had no connection issues whatsoever. It ran really well. Couldn't really tell whether I was playing with a PC or a PlayStation 4 players because, well, it just kind of played the same. Other than their icon, it was.
Yeah, that's the only indication, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, the first cross-platform multiplayer that actually seems to work properly. Yeah, we'll see how long it takes before the PC side gets hacked to hell, but we'll eventually. I'm sure they've thought of that. So, yeah. Anyways, other than that, I've been playing more Guitar Hero Live. Finally got one of the most troublesome achievements in the game last night. Decided, okay, I'm going to get this one because it's one of the ones that I absolutely need to get my gamer score back to where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
I.e. ending with a 0 or a 5. So, yeah, and of course they don't make it easy for you. It's you have to finish in the top 5 of 18 consecutive songs in the on-demand section.
Ew.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Ew.
And for that, you get 18 points. God damn it, guys.
So we're talking on the show a lot about asshole behavior. That is an example of it right there.
Yeah, well, the one I'm after right now is playing GHTV for 24 hours. I'm about
straight?
No, not straight. Just total. So I'm about 90% of the way through that. So
that's reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah, and that will get me 24 achievement points, and that's going to fix my score. So. After that, if I don't get any points out of GH Live, I'll be okay.
But what if you do?
Well, there are no weird numbered points after that. So I'll have fixed it. Unless I get some more score out of threes, which has really weird achievement point values, like 3 and 66 and 99 and 640. Well...
My wife plays that on her iPad regularly.
Huh.
I'm thankful I did not jump in that pool.
Yeah, it's great time waster. So there's that. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. But you guys, I want to actually throw this over to Brandon since he kind of got a little short shrift last week. So why don't you let us know what you've been up to, dude?
Okay, well, first of all, yes, I am still playing Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. Nothing new to add there. Right. Still hard, still fun, still, well,
terrifying.
Haunting my nightmares. Mm-hmm. Yeah. let's see. Also, I've been playing The Witness, which me and Chris have both been playing that one.
Yeah, we talked a bit about that on the show on Friday.
Yeah. I don't really have much to add to that. Like I said last time, this is one of the most relaxing / infuriating games you will ever come across because on the one hand, it's a very peaceful type of thing. You can go at it at your own pace. There's no time limit or anything. You can even just stop in the middle of a puzzle and go on, find another one. Just no rush at all. Those puzzles can be downright devious at times.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, there isn't a whole lot you can do with just regular grid and line puzzles. Oh, yes, there are. And I mean, just like basic variations, like, you know, obviously there's the one where, you know, you got to go through the maze, you know, go through this end, get to that end. But there'll also like, they'll also vary it up. Like, you know, they'll have the grid and they'll have these little black spots on it. And you need to have all the black spots covered before you get to the end to solve the puzzle. There's the one where you are actually controlling two lines at the same time and trying to get them to their respective endpoints. Sometimes it's in the same direction. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you won't even be able to see the second line.
Oh, that's evil.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll have to do the same thing where you cover all the different spots, but both lines will be different colors and the spots will be their respective colors. You've got to make sure they're all covered without, you know, crossing over or anything like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes there will be ones where you got to try and cover all the spots on the thing, but as you're going through the puzzle, because a lot of times these puzzles, sometimes they'll be like in a sequence of five screens linked to each other.
Right.
And at one point, and I think Chris has probably gotten to this point too, it's the point where you're down near the water, and as you're going through the screens, you start to realize that the screens seem to have started melting and that the last one has pretty much halfway melted down to the floor.
Yep.
Yeah.
That seems like it could be a problem.
And then there's other variations, like there's one where you go through a hedge maze and then you have to retrace your steps in the hedge maze onto the puzzle. And then there's this other one where you have to, instead of using the actual puzzle screen itself, there will be the puzzle screen, and then in front of it will be this huge like grid made up of like glass or plaque or whatever, and you have to walk on the sequence that it needs to go on the puzzle. And it's really weird too, because in that particular sequence, it's like it's in the middle of this place where there's like a lot of these stone, really realistic stone statues everywhere that all look like they've been taken out of the Middle Ages and they're engaged in sword fighting. And as you're walking on the glass grid, as it goes down, it makes a sound like swords are clashing against each other. I'm starting to get a feeling that this island in this game is supposed to be like some sort of midpoint in the space-time continuum or something. Because, like, I'm seeing a lot of, like, random stuff that seems to come from all these different eras in history. But, so yeah, that's The Witness. Highly recommend it. Yeah. It is a great game.
Yeah. Everybody seems to be highly enjoying that and being incredibly frustrated on YouTube.
Yeah. Make no mistake, there are some real brain benders on there. But usually the solution is there to find. It's just you kind of have to be aware of your surroundings to find it. But the other game I've been playing, of course, is Darkest Dungeon, which I got to mention a little bit last time but didn't get to talk as much about because we had the interview with Tom. Basically, Darkest Dungeon is a game where you have inherited this mansion somewhere where you're the last person who had it at some point opened up a gate into the Chthonic netherworld or whatever. And, he basically committed suicide because he went mad with terror, I guess. And so the thing is still open and its influence has started spreading out into the surrounding area. So like the village and the forest and the cove next to it have all started seeing all types of crap popping up, all types of weird monsters and things of that sort. And so in order to go back and sort of go into the darkest dungeon, which is the area that is he's sort of managed to open up into, you have to hire and send in these waves after waves of various adventurers into it in hopes of finally sealing shut. But the thing is first of all, one of the great things about this game is the art style. It has a very unique visual style that's very kind of reminiscent of like Mike Mignola, you know, like Hellboy, that type of thing. Love the art style. Gameplay wise, it's basically sort of a roguelike where you and a bunch of your fellow bunch of adventurers go in to these various areas, all of which are auto-generated, you know, no session through a particular era is the same way twice. It's always going to be randomly generated. And as you go in, obviously you have a bunch of weird and terrifying enemies you have to fight. Everything from skeletons to gross pig people to bandits to Lovecraftian horrors of the deep. That type of thing. But the thing is, at the same time, you have to worry about things like, for one thing, you have to worry about things like resources. You have to make sure that you got enough food and enough torches and stuff so that everything can be fed and kept well lit. Because when it goes dark, the enemies get especially vicious. Also, you have to watch out for your character's sanity and also stress level. If their stress level gets too high, they will actually have a heart attack. And depending on the whim of the game, well, not whim of the game, more or less how your life, your health points are at any given time, it'll either reduce it down to one health point or it will just kill you on the spot. But you also have to worry about things like their mental health because, as you know, their stress level and battles go and they injuries and all that, they'll start to develop various negative traits like, you know, fear of the dark or kleptomania or claustrophobia, paranoia, OCD, PTSD, that type of thing. And this will, in fact, affect how they work in the field. And some points, they might not even be able to go out in the field at all. Also, your hero will die. This isn't a matter of if, it's a matter of when. You are going to die at some point in time. And usually quite horribly at the hands of something downright terrifying.
Yeah. And at that point, well, do you lose like all of your progress or?
Yeah, kind of. Because, I mean, you've got several. This game doesn't have a fail state. So, you know, you can blunt force it through it, but it takes a bit of time and commitment because, you know, there is nothing worse than having a really well built up party of adventurers and then having them all slaughtered in an instant. So,
yeah. But at the same time, it's like, well, your whole party died, but at least their stuff is still where he's left it. So,
yeah.
You have to get, as long as you can get your other party there, you can keep going. I'm imagining.
But that's what I've been doing.
Cool. Yeah, Pat.
Street Fighter V, of course.
Yes.
Because must get as much of that in as possible before that terrible stretch until launch.
Yeah.
Still Trails in the Sky SC, still Heaven's Ward. And then at the end of last week's show, we were going over the PlayStation sale.
Yeah.
And I picked up a Turno Blade out of that.
Yeah.
Kind of disappointed with how that one turned out, but at least I didn't pay too much for it, so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's not an example of a game that respects your time.
Oh.
It's a Metroidvania game, and from a mechanical standpoint, there's very little wrong with it. But every aspect of the presentation, like, you go into a new room and you're going to see, like, a puzzle of some sort.
Hmm.
You'll see every... It will take the time to zoom in on every element of that puzzle, every object in the room.
Oof.
And then you can't skip it or anything. And then once it feels it has adequately displayed, you know, the components of the room to you, then you regain control of your character, but not until.
Hmm.
I'm not going to lie, I couldn't put up with more than 10 minutes of it.
Jeez.
Yeah. So I'm hoping.
Seems like that would get really, really irritating quickly.
I'll give it another look probably sometime this week, but I'm not really optimistic that it's going to... It really feels like this is the kind of thing that they'd make a habit out of.
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm.
So...
No, that's disappointing.
I don't know. I hope it's a better investment than it looks like it was so far, but right now, ugh.
Yeah. Okay. How about you, Chris?
I'm also playing The Witness, and it's one of those games that when you're doing well, you feel like the smartest person around, and when you're not, you feel like the dumbest person has ever lived on this planet. And so I was working my way through the quarry area, trying to figure out this puzzle just to get this staircase to go down. And banging my head against it, I decided to just call it quits, come back later. I started up today and got it first try.
Yeah.
Supposedly a solution I did not try yesterday. But somehow I just, like, oh, this way. Oh, that works.
Yeah.
What the hell was I doing yesterday?
The Witness is one of those games. The Witness is one of those games with a lot of aha moments in it.
Yeah. I've also heard some people say, like, yeah, if you're beating your head against the puzzle for too long, just stop, walk away, go do something else, and come back with fresh eyes, and you usually pass it after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I also was playing the Division, which is in beta for this weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm actually liking it. I was surprised. It's kind of a mix of Destiny and Diablo. In that, very much it's a shooter, it's third-person cover-based shooter, and they very much make a point that you're not going to be able to just run and gun. I should just get killed quickly. Mm-hmm. And I was having trouble when I was doing the video, which will probably be going up a little bit later, because I would just keep popping out of cover just because I happened to pull the stick away for a brief moment and it just pulls you away.
Yeah.
And I die that way. Mm. And it's really hard to tell if this game is going to be good because the beta is so limited. They give you like two story missions, some side stuff, no crafting. There's a base upgrade element to it that they only give you like two upgrades to do in this one part of it. And so there's a lot of it that I don't really know a ton about, but it was fun to just walk around finding it just generates side missions constantly to go do, like, oh, free these hostages, secure this area, things like that. There's also a bunch of collectibles, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And just the pure combat and all that felt pretty good. The other part of that's interesting is the Dark Zone, which is sort of a PvP area. Where essentially you can do some of the same sorts of things you're doing in the regular area. Then you have the edit part where there can be rogue agents, as they call them, sort of the other players that have decided to not help anybody and just start shooting fellow people. Yeah. So it's an aspect of that where you could be doing co-op with three others and somebody turns on the rest, kills them all, takes all their loot, and gets it out.
Yeah, that's. It sounds like they took griefing and turned that into a game mechanic. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is when you get loot in the Dark Zone, you have to take it to a specific extraction point. And essentially a helicopter comes by every couple of minutes, and you essentially hook up your loot to the rope it drops down.
Yeah.
And right there, all nearby enemies or humans are immediately alerted to your presence.
Okay.
So you have to sort of defend for the amount of time the extraction's going on.
Yeah.
To get your loot lifted out to the stash that you have back at the base.
Yeah.
So it's got that sort of stuff like stash between characters. You can break down loot that you don't need, just specific components, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just enjoying it when I was playing the beta. And I've definitely seen some people think it's terrible. I think because, I don't know. I think a game's been in the works for so long that people are not sure exactly what they're expecting at this point.
Yeah.
And, you can also shut doors on cars. That's big the thing they showed.
Next gen thing. You can close doors.
You can also shoot the doors and they shut.
Hmm.
Like from the other side of the car. I might have also just broken the door. So if you break the door, it shuts and then it's ajar. It's like hanging off a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was having fun with that. Like, just like, oh, I shoot the door and then it shuts. I don't know how that works.
Physics. Doesn't have any.
And the other thing, so I was talking about Tiny Troopers on the weekend show.
And everybody should avoid it.
Yeah, it's one of those mobile games that's not done well on consoles. And I played a Riptide GP2, which is on
PS4
and Xbox One.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's kind of a more sort of Jet Moto kind of racing game.
More people need to know about that game.
And it's pretty good.
Yeah.
From the start, it controls well. So that's what Tiny Troopers failed to do.
Yeah.
Same sort of upgrade mechanics. You earn money for every race. You finish in the top three. You use that to upgrade your vehicles or buy new vehicles or whatever.
Yeah.
And I ended up, another customization, sort of color stuff. I ended up choosing colors like Mountain Dew for Jet Moto. So I figure if it's going to look like Jet Moto, I might as well go all the way.
Yeah.
And not too much variety in terms of race types. There's races, there's elimination, and there's trick courses.
Yeah.
That's about it. And the only thing I have that I don't like about it is that the environments aren't that great. They kind of focus all their graphic power on just the racer in the water. Yeah. Everything else around is kind of just flat, not really sticking out as well as you'd like.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
If you don't want to pay for, if you want to pay for, don't want to pay for like Sonic and All Stars Transformed, that's probably the best sort of water controls I've seen in any game. This is sort of like a cheaper version of that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Cool. Emily?
Nothing new. Wow, and trying to move.
Yeah, still in the process of that.
Yeah, we fully move on the the 13th is when we got people coming. So I'm
is that coming along?
It's coming along. We're not as far along as I'd like to be. My wife has to go out of town this week, so I'm going to try and put in some time as long as I can. It was really just a matter of getting the time. Like, work is still crazy, and you know, it is what it is. Nothing's really different. But I know I'm probably going to pack up a good chunk of the systems, probably all of them this week. Just because there's nothing that I have, you know, that I really am desperate to play at the moment. So I'll probably just be doing some stuff on handhelds, and, you know, we stream everything on our Apple TV, so it's not like I need to have the Xbox out. So yeah. Just to make it easier, because I'm taking stuff over. I want to pay my movers as little as possible. You know, like, not as in like I want to be a cheap ass, but as in like the more stuff that I can carry over there myself.
Yeah.
You know, the less money there is. And I don't know, I'm weird. Like, I'm strange about having people like handle my stuff, you know?
Oh, I completely agree.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, well, what don't I want them, you know, knowing that I have? I don't know. I've always been like that. Ever since I was a kid, we got broken into, and I've always been hella paranoid about people like seeing what I have in my house.
Yeah.
Cause you just never know. So, yeah, I'm probably going to pack up the PlayStation and the Xbox and everything. So, I'm one of those people that keeps boxes.
Yeah.
So I will have all of the stuff in its actual box, and then just move it over there. So I think probably the game you'll hear about me playing next week will be, hopefully I can get Comcast to switch over my internet to my new house without shutting off the internet at my current house. So that'll be a fun game. But yeah, other than that, I haven't been doing anything. I picked up, started playing Persona again last night and got about 15 minutes into it, and I just couldn't. Mm. So I'm gonna give it another shot when I don't have any options. I think maybe that'll be different. But yeah, that's about it.
All right.
Just remember, you always have the anime option for Persona.
Mm.
Yeah, I know, and I'm like in October. Like, I need to just power through it. Like, isn't the big thing? Doesn't it happen in December? From what I read,
well, there are many big things that go on throughout. I mean, that last stretch of the game is a hell of a ride.
Okay,
assuming you can just get through that dungeon.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess. Let's jump into our discussion stories then. First one up, looks like Sonic 3's worst-kept secret, being its soundtrack being composed by Michael Jackson, apparently turns out to be true, or at least partially.
Yeah. Considering how much buzz there was about this pretty much from the time the game was in development, it's really not a surprise whatsoever.
Yeah.
Doesn't really answer our questions as to why he was uncredited. One popular theory is that he just wasn't satisfied by the results of, you know, what the Sega Genesis sound chip could crank out, which is, I don't know. I can see how, like, a top-tier professional musician might feel that way.
Yeah, but to me, that doesn't really hold water.
But that, yeah, because that comes after Moonwalker. As far as also true.
So he should have been well aware of what the Genesis could do.
And I was just going to say, for the time, it was also a fantastic sound chip.
Yeah. Well, as long as you knew how to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you weren't using the Gems sound library in its default state.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was not good.
So it might have also... It might have also had something to do with certain scandals that came to light around that time. So. Yeah,
that's probably more likely.
Yeah.
Hmm. There's also
one of which was more or less later confirmed to have more or less not actually happened.
Yeah, and a lot of what people accused Michael Jackson of turned out to not be true. So
yeah,
go figure.
And a lot of the stuff he was telling us turned out to be true too.
Yeah.
Like, for example, yes, he really did have that condition that was making his skin slowly turn white.
Yep.
That's why he started wearing the glove.
Mm-hmm. There's also on the Sonic 3 soundtrack, there's actually a I wish I could remember the area of it and the track that it was referencing.
Ice Cap Zone.
Yeah, there it is. Mm-hmm. Ice Cap Zone, which is it's not reminiscent of a certain song by one of the former Sega employees. It was that song.
Yep.
So yeah,
we should link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. If you can find it, just drop it in the notes, and I'll put that in afterwards. So yeah, nice to know that MJ was involved, but kind of sad that he didn't like take the credit he deserved for it.
Yeah,
because a lot of that soundtrack really was good.
It was.
So
yeah, Mike loved video games. You guys saw his arcade, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's one of those things. He probably wasn't satisfied with it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good old Michael Jackson.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of old games, there was a... Remember that PSP version of Saints Row that didn't actually happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Volition apparently found it, and they've released it. So now you can download it for free. So just
they released the ROM to the out into the wild?
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, there's a link there. You can get it at Unseen 64, which is interesting in a couple of ways, because the only way you can actually play that on legit hardware is to have a hacked PSP.
Yep.
Which is basically, so they've actually given a very legitimate reason to actually using an emulator. Go figure.
And it just so happens there's a very good one out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. PPSSPP. Yeah, you can't really say that name too well without sounding like you have a lisp. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's
just still a fantastic emulator.
Yeah, works on Android too.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. Not a whole lot to say. Just if you were interested in that Saints Row game that never came to be, even though it was actually finished, you can hit the link in the show notes, download it, and try it out for yourself.
Yeah, Giant Bomb played it on their Friday show.
Mm.
And
how did it go?
Not too well. Surprisingly, it didn't crash, but the thing that they had happen is, like, you get in the car, you run at other cars, and the other car just goes flying off into the ether.
Whee!
Their car is, like, running on like moon gravity, so it just bounces constantly over again.
Nice. Yeah.
And they were trying to do missions, and as soon as they die, drops them off back where they were before and says, taxi mission completed. Even if they're not doing a taxi mission, nothing really works. So
that must have been some party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Surprisingly, it's canceled for a reason.
Yeah, it was canceled for a reason.
Didn't come together probably early on. That's all they have left of it.
Yeah. And apparently, Library of Congress did have a complete version, so I don't know. Maybe that was the version that they had. Who knows?
Yeah.
Either way, it's there if you want to check it out.
The cancellation.
Yeah. So. All right. So on to sadder news. Mighty Number 9, delayed again. Does this really surprise
not
anybody?
Not looking good for concept.
No, yeah. Especially when they're delaying it because of a networking bug?
Yeah.
Which is what they're saying this time around. They're basically delaying it for a feature that I don't think anybody really cares much about.
Yeah. And to frame this correctly as well, you have to hold this up next to the Red Ash debacle for one thing,
mm-hmm.
because that was just a mess, and there's no way around it. This is also a game that was on Kickstarter. People have bought and paid for it up front, and it's been more or less on the back burner next to projects like Soul Sacrifice. There's ReCore in the works right now. You got to kind of wonder if Inafune is taking the whole concept of crowdsourcing seriously.
Well, I don't know. I think he's taking it seriously. I think the problem is that they have done something like where they're pretty much he's developing on all these platforms and with all these different things all together. And, you know, it's sort of like if that's how broad you're going to be with Kickstarter, then I think this is the kind of thing that you have to expect to happen.
Yeah.
I think it's all feature creep. They added way too much, too many platforms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at the Shovel Knight model where they just released on two or three platforms at first, then bring others along, then add all the extra content that got paid for through the extra tiers and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They're,
and everybody's happy, and you get your game sooner, then you get all this extra content coming in over time.
Yeah. With Mighty No. 9, they're trying to do all of that at once.
Yeah.
And think, that's coming to bite them in the ass there.
All I'm saying is it just seems weird that they're working on all these other projects when they still haven't gotten this one out that people have bought from them already.
Yeah. But,
That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, no, I don't disagree, but I think it's one of those things where this is, it sounds like not just feature creep, but they have basically too many things to juggle at once. And, you know, this is the kind of thing, you know, I work for a software company, and this is one of those things where you just start having weird stuff come up that you just didn't plan for. And it creates so much extra time and things that you have to do. I just don't think that they were ready for it. And I do think that is because of feature creep, because of all the places they're trying to publish this game.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we saw this happen with the Double Fine Adventure thing.
Yeah,
they're planning for this small thing, and they got several times more money than they needed. All of a sudden, their timelines are way out of whack.
Yeah.
Because now they're making a much bigger, more ambitious game.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that they should just release the game and
worry about the networking.
Fix the networking later.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think they should do, but you know, it's just because I don't think anybody bought this game to go, let me get on these networking features.
Yeah.
No, I agree, especially in context.
Yeah.
That they need to get this game out and, you know, just get it into the hands of the people who kickstarted it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of the reasons that I've never backed a Kickstarter. I mean, this is the kind of thing where if I had kickstarted this, I would be so frustrated and so angry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even have a lot of time to play games these days, but it'd be the kind of thing where it's like, so wait a minute, man, I paid you all this money, and I'm sure, you know, there's probably people on these much larger tiers that are like, dude, just give me my damn game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's also a part of me that doesn't feel like he's being 100% honest, like, and not – as in, like, you know, he's not being 100% honest because he's trying to be malicious or something like that, but more like, you know, Mighty No. 9 was a relatively successful Kickstarter. We all know that.
Yeah.
And part of me wonders if you know, sort of the ambition of it, even it's really just, you know, it's a platformer, it's a Mega Man. But part of me really wonders if, like, Inafune was looking at this, like, okay, number one, I got to make a statement with this. And number two, we're going to make this the greatest thing ever, you know, fuck Capcom. And, you know, because, I mean, let's not forget, this is the same guy that's been out, you know, basically bad-mouthing every Japanese developer and saying that Japanese gaming is dead and all that stuff. And then, you know, he's running into the same problems that I think that he's accusing some people of.
Yeah.
And I think part of it may be about saving face because he doesn't want to say that, you know, out loud, like, well, we got caught on our ass by this stuff. I mean, there's been an overall lack of transparency, you know, to the point that Pat made with, like, the Red Ash debacle and everything else like that. You know, there's an overwhelming lack of transparency. And the Red Ash thing was, from my understanding, is he just wanted to give his guys something else to work on while they were finishing Mighty No. 9, so he didn't have to dissolve everybody, which I can completely understand. But you got to start pulling that capital yourself and not keep going back to everybody else. That's what I think.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, I think with Kickstarter, you have to be very careful and look at exactly who you're backing, what they're offering, what they're promising, And you have to sort of say, was this worth it? It's like, you can look at the Pinball Arcade Kickstarters. That stuff's pretty simple, pretty by the, you know, those guys can make those tables and pretty much hit their timelines easily on that stuff. Cause it's something they've done a lot. Yeah.
They know the scope of the project.
Yeah.
And this thing is like
full games. You're getting in at the very beginning of the development cycle, probably months, if not years before the game would have otherwise been announced. And, you know, even if you do end up with what you paid for, it's going to be a long haul.
Yeah,
and there are definitely games on there that are obvious scams. I've seen there's some guy on here that kept putting up like a $500 console, as in his goal was $500. And eventually, I think somebody put a joke bit up there and it got passed. And somehow, because their rules stipulate you can't take the money out that would put that thing back under.
Hmm.
I think they just didn't pay it. They just let it the payment cancel out.
Just put it put a bogus credit card or something on it. Just so it wouldn't,
yeah. People do that all the time on those things.
Yeah. It's true.
Sucks for those guys that barely get over and find out, oh, we're not going to actually get all the money that we needed.
Yeah.
I can look at the stretch goals for this, and it's like two more stages, Mac and Linux versions, and here's PS3, 360, Wii U, and then PS4, Xbox One, Vita, 3DS. Like, what the hell are you guys doing? You got 10 different platforms.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a documentary. Here's New Game Plus. There's boss rush mode, challenge mode, extra and stage and boss.
And the problem with co-op. It's like they're not even thinking about what kind of time that would take. Like, just get the game complete. Like, I don't buy games because they have boss rush modes. Mm. Like, I buy games because there's stuff that I want to play.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of disheartening, too, because that feature creep, frankly, is one of the things that's really started to ruin AAA gaming for me.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I play a game, I want to get to the point. I don't want to have, you know, a tower defense simulator so I can do this thing or what. It's getting out of hand.
Yeah. How many open world games do you look at the whole map and you're like, why do I want to do your stupid race missions? I look at those and I'm like, you guys could cut out half of these missions, have better missions, better side stuff, and then get rid of all this fluff just because GTA did it 10 years ago. Added stupid taxi missions and pizza delivery missions.
It sucked then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was because all the rest of it was
good. But the thing was, is back then, you know, if you were doing it in GTA, is that, you know, at least it was optional. Like, some of that stuff, it seemed like they put in there just to give you something to do. And whereas some of these other games, it's like they're making something like that a core part of their gameplay, where it's kind of like it felt like Rockstar was just like, well, if you want to be that guy that drives people around, I guess you can. We have – it's right here. Screw it. Go ahead. Whereas other people are like, this is a feature.
Yeah,
that's Assassin's Creed right there. Oh, you open up the map, and then you can't even see the map anymore because there's just icons all over the damn place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For boxes, missions, your banks, all this other crap.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed really has gotten out of hand. Anyways. So my number 9, not coming out when we thought. Hopefully, when it actually does come out, it'll actually be good. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
I'm crossing my fingers because I do want this thing to succeed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the people who have actually like played the earlier versions of it, it's like, yeah, it's definitely a game that's actually fun to play. So, you know, if they can actually work their bugs out and get it out, I'm sure it'll probably be a very fun game that I will enjoy playing.
I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a proper Mega Man game, so.
Yeah. So. And it's likely we're not going to see a proper one anytime soon, so. I mean,
at least we got that. We got that Legacy Collection on all the consoles.
Oh, yeah. That's worth mentioning. If you haven't tried that one out, check that. It's like the first 6.
Yeah. A bunch of extra stuff.
Yeah.
Because you had Frank Cifaldi working on it, and he archives a lot of magazines.
Yeah.
So he has all of this material he can include of magazine stuff, concept art, all this stuff that's pretty cool that you want at that point.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, and speaking of games that we may eventually end up playing, it looks like our friends over at Good Old Games have decided to add a games in development, a.k.a. early access feature. Still DRM free, it's looking like, as is typical mm-hmm. for them. Not
they're also having a 14-day refund policy.
Yeah.
So they're Steam Machine here.
Oh, your Skype just went garble garble.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, I don't mind that Good Old Games is getting into early access. I'm just hoping that they exercise some sort of quality control. Because, that's a big problem on Steam right now. It's just, it's bad.
What quality?
Well, they're actually...
Yeah, Steam doesn't have any quality control. That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Give us your mobile games. Give us your crap. We'll take it all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here is the statement they said. They say, we want all gamers on GOG.com to have access to what these titles have to offer. But we want to get it right, carefully evaluating each and every game, offering a 14-day refund policy, and providing GOG Galaxy support with update, rollback, and more.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds so, like just like everything else they do, they're trying to do it right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Might want to pay attention, Valve.
Yes.
Valve doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, they're making so much money, they don't care.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, this next Criterion story. Who added this one in?
I did.
Yeah.
So, a while ago, I think around the time Need for Speed Rivals launched, the founders of that company, Alex Ward and I forget what her name is, Fiona... You know something? I forget what her name is. They both left. Not sure what they were doing. Fiona Sperry.
Okay.
And we find out what they're doing. Three Fields Entertainment is their new company. And the first game is Dangerous Golf. And essentially it is Burnout's Crash Mode, but golf in indoor environments. So they have screenshots in that article if you open that up. First one is just a urinal. Just this has this golf ball that is on fire, just busting through toilet seats and urinals and all that stuff, just destruction. Then there's another, it's like an indoor shelving with crystal glasses and wine and all that, just destroying everything. So seems like they figured out another way to do their crash mode stuff.
Yeah, without having to use cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, then looking at these screenshots and stuff, it's like, yeah, this looks stupid and awesome, and this is the kind of stuff that I want to see more of. Just let's go out there, experiment, do things that nobody else is doing.
Mm. And it's out in May for PS4, Xbox One, and Steam.
Yeah. And
so not too much longer of a wait.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to want to play this one.
And meanwhile, we're still waiting to figure out what the actual Criterion is doing.
Yeah. Yeah, they showed that weird extreme sports type thing that a couple of years back, and then we haven't heard anything since.
So. Yeah, it was an interesting event. Sort of all early access games they were showing pretty much.
Yeah. So then I guess we'll go on to the next story here. Insomniac announced their new game. Song of the Deep. It's looking pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It's like Blastmaster, but underwater.
Yep. The real story about this article is not that there's really a new Insomniac game, because they're going to make games. It's that GameStop is going to be publishing it.
Yep. Like, it's going to be...
Yeah,
you know,
I
want
to hear nothing else from any developer that talks shit about GameStop. Last generation was so tedious when we had people in the games industry talking about how they were the boogeyman and blah, blah, blah. They're selling our games and blah, blah, blah. We're not making any money. And then, oh, you'll publish something for us? I think... don't even get me started.
Yeah, well, this okay, to so me basically, is... You know, go ahead, Brandon.
I was going to say, the way this is going to work is it's going to be digital. There's going to be, on the one hand, it's going to be a digital download that you can get on whatever system. But as far as physical copies go, you can only get them at a GameStop.
Yeah, because of course.
Yeah, they've published games before.
Have they?
I want to say there was a flight combat game that was released on, I think, Xbox 360 and PS3 that did that. I'm not sure if I can find it right now, but yeah, they've published some stuff.
Yeah. Either way, it's kind of how, you know, a company like GameStop that sees digital sales eating into their source of revenue. It's a good way for them to remain relevant. Yeah. If you can't get money off digital sales, well, you be the one doing the digital sales.
I might be thinking of Mad Catz.
Yeah, I think it was Mad Catz because they also...
Because they could put out
a bundle controller
for
controller,
it or something like that.
Yeah.
Mad Catz is really branching out.
Yeah.
Well, now they got Rock Band, so they're all good.
Yeah, for a little while anyway.
Puts everything else to crap.
Yeah. So... Yeah.
Well, I just see it as problematic simply because, like, not problematic, but almost in a way, like, they're sort of expanding out because how many of you guys, and of course, I guess this would all be anecdotal if we're talking about it, but how many of you actually shop at GameStop?
I do.
Why? I go on there occasion.
Why?
Because they're
there. I have a membership card.
Mm. Okay. So that, and that's
I got a membership card. I get the selection. Free, get the free GameStop. The free Game Informer.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the only reason that you go. It's not because the service is any better or anything else like that. Like, for instance, I pretty much do everything at Amazon or Best Buy because I get a discount or because it's just Amazon. So, you know, and even now Amazon is doing stuff for Prime members where Prime members get 20% off of games, which we had talked about before. So,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Like, I don't like going to GameStop simply because I know eventually that even just for something as simple as buying a game or something else like that, I know I can get it cheaper elsewhere. And, you know, if both Amazon and Best Buy are breathing down their neck as far as game sales and can offer stuff 20% less, this is the next venue for them because then they can just get things that nobody else can carry.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised to see this go ahead in the future. Rather, and it's sort of an interesting way for GameStop to compete because doing stuff like memberships and everything else like that isn't enough. It's really at this point for them, it's going to be about exclusive content.
Yeah.
That they can lock down later on.
Yeah. And I mean, they tried stuff like the retro consoles and games, and that's more or less sort of kind of worked, except for the fact that they've got quality issues with those.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, they checked all their cartridges and they make sure that it's all working. Yeah, right. No, they don't. you can buy games there and end up with bootleg stuff that doesn't even work, that has been deliberately damaged to not work. I don't think they've really thought that whole thing through, and if they have, somebody over there isn't doing their job. So, yeah.
I imagine part of that is that they probably bought supplies from other companies, and that's sort of the stuff they're trying to sell, without being able to necessarily go through all of that and check it hand by hand.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of the stuff, like, you know, for instance, they were selling DuckTales 2 at a reasonable price, and somebody got it, and it had reproduction on it. So, yeah. Reproduction label, and the cartridge wasn't even, like, that game. It was something else that had been just... that had the pins scored away so that it wouldn't load and show what it actually was.
Yeah, you're always going to get jerks that try and trade in that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And hoping they get the less informed clerks too.
But that was resold.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you gotta, if you're sending everything to a central location to be looked at, is somebody over there is not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Or either that, or they just don't care, which is more likely.
Yeah, that's where I'm leaning.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And speaking of not caring, Final Fantasy 15 has been... we've been looking at this game on and off for the past few years, trying to determine whether it was something that we were actually interested in. And I'm happy to report now that we can cross it off our list.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. I'm glad they got that out of the way early this year so that I don't have to waste my time with it for the rest of the year. So, thanks.
Also, Square. just sort of breaking news I got from Game Informer. They're announcing a Final Fantasy Uncovered event on March 30th. We're going to reveal
that's
the
where
release
we get
date.
The release date.
And, yeah. Yep. And I'm sure we won't care about that either.
I looked at the footage and stuff, and I was like, man, this is a great action game. I would love to play this. Wait, this is Final Fantasy? What the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and this all came out of the an active time report or whatever they're calling it that went on, I guess, last night.
Yep.
And they showed off a bunch of footage of the game, the revamped battle system. Basically, the game has completed its descent into generic AAA pandering. It covers all the bases. You now even have stealth segments in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just looks like a mishmash of all these different AAA concepts.
Yeah.
It doesn't really seem to even aspire to an identity of its own. It's just taking all of these elements and ham-fisting them into a single product that for some reason has Final Fantasy on the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they called this something else, then I would probably be okay with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're trying to sell this as a Final Fantasy game just to make money off of it. That's kind of skeezy, but... Well,
it's because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they haven't known what they were doing for God knows how long. I mean, they have just been coasting along. Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to sound cynical because I don't feel very good, but I don't think Square has known for a very long time what to do with anything, because, I mean, let's take a look at a calendar. All right, Final Fantasy 15 was, what was it, Versus? Isn't that what they called it back in 2007? Yeah. So, I mean, they don't know what anybody wants. They have literally just been putting out stuff because they don't know how to manage anything. That's how they're working. And so I think what they're doing is they're overmanaged, but they don't actually have anybody that's truly in charge of doing things. Mm. And so they get these things created. I mean, you guys remember the story about the infamous rock that somebody worked on for 2 weeks for 13?
Yeah.
Like, they don't know what they're doing. So what they're doing is they're just having all these people that they feel are creative create a bunch of things, and then they're trying to pick up the pieces and go, okay, well, can we make a game out of this? And that's the problem.
That's not how you make video games.
No, that's not. You have to have some sort of scope. You have to be able to look at something and go, this is why this is working. They have lost all of that, really, since Final Fantasy 13. Everything that started in 2006 and 2007.
Oh, I would wind it all the way back to right after Mistwalker left.
No, right after. I mean, 12 was still decent, but, I mean, it's... The thing is, 12 was at least put together. This 13 and everything after it was not. I mean,
I can give 12 that. It was a concise, singular thought.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Everything else is scattershot.
Yeah.
It didn't really fit the Final Fantasy mold, but the left hand knew what the right hand was doing. I can
exactly.
Give it.
Yeah.
And exactly. And that they don't know they're not doing that anymore. It's literally just, let's throw a bunch of stuff together and let's see if we can make any of it work. And
let's spend
their
a bunch
problem.
Of money doing it because, God damn it, that's the AAA way.
Yeah, we'll make it look good. And then let's not forget, I mean, this is the same company that they didn't understand why Bravely Default did well. You know, I mean, I firmly believe Square has a management problem. Because there's no way anyone remotely competent is at the wheel as far as getting this stuff in line. Because otherwise you would have more of a singular vision. Like, it's Square at this point reminds me of a company that has way too many middle managers and doesn't have enough people at the top going, this is the way we're going to go. And you can see it. You can see it from 13 and everything else like that, you know, going forward. I mean, we had three of the 13 games that were produced because there was that many assets and they could reuse, they could do all of that stuff. 14 launched, it was complete garbage and it had to be completely redone. I mean, these guys are coasting. And now with 15, they think that we're not going to go back to what actually worked and evolve that. We're just going to make an action game. Remember the talk around 13?
It's a salvage job.
Yeah, do you remember the talk around 13? They were like, oh, well, we could consider this more like an FPS. Like, what? Nobody buys these games for that.
Really? Yeah. Well, this, you have to remember, this was the company that had no confidence in this current console generation before it started.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Yeah.
But there is a possible happy ending to all of this, and that is having Hajime Tabata go from working on Final Fantasy 15 to finally getting to make Type 1, and then take whatever Final Fantasy 16 is to be and put it squarely in the hands of Tokyo RPG Factory.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that actually happens.
That is how this needs to conclude.
Yeah. I don't know if Nomura is willing to let go of Final Fantasy, though. That's the problem. As long as he has something to do with it, this series is going to be in trouble.
But see, I don't even think it's him. I think it's don't forget, he still answers to somebody. Like that, and that's kind of
answers to Yosuke Matsuda.
Yeah, and as long as people are like, well, as long as someone like that is at the top, and it's not going, man, we're heading in the wrong direction, it's always gonna be like this.
Yeah.
Well, Final Fantasy 15 predated Matsuda. He wasn't in charge of the company when this whole mess started. It's just kind of, it's a situation where they have to get something out of it now. And I could even say the same for Kingdom Hearts 3. That was in the works before he took over the company. The only things he really owns right now, the only thing he really owns right now is Tokyo RPG Factory. That was his kind of initiative. And then all the handling of what used to be Eidos.
Yeah.
Whatever you may make of that, I'm so far on the outside of that whole situation to even have an opinion on it. But the fact of the matter is, at this point, we're still at least a few months, if not a year, away from really understanding what Yosuke Matsuda is about.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be good, it may be bad. But Tokyo RPG Factory is a very good display of his good faith, I would say. And
Square at this point is like Sega was right before the Dreamcast. They still have a bunch of rabid fans, but there's nobody at the wheel that's actually doing anything worthwhile. That's my opinion. I mean, of course, there's a couple of things here and there in the same way that Sega was still putting out, you know, good stuff right up until the end, but they lost, and let me clarify, they've lost sight of what actually made them great. And that's the same exact thing that Sega did. And so in that comparison, I think it's apt. And somebody has to write that ship because it's not working right now.
Yeah. Square is, I mean, effectively, there are three companies right now.
Yeah.
It's not like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. It's like there's a center hand that neither of them are aware of exists. So, yeah, that's a weird analogy.
Three-handed
three-handed person.
No, but it is. I mean, it is apt in a certain way. Like I said, I mean, this is obviously something that's happened to a lot of these companies. A lot of these Japanese companies have gone through the same thing where it's like the stuff that made them successful, I think they sort of looked at as like, well, we can't be in that business anymore because you know, there's these Call of Duty games, and they're making 300 trillion gazillion hojillion dollars, and you know, and I don't think they understood the markets that they were dealing with, and I think that was a big part of the problem, and I still, to a certain extent, think that they don't. Like, to go back to Mighty No. 9 for a second, I don't think that game needs to be on nearly as many of those platforms as have mentioned to be successful. I feel like they should have started out on 2, maybe PS4 and Vita, and 3DS, and then you branch out from there. That's where you go to the Xbox. That's where you do all that other stuff. But this desire, like where you have to have these immediate numbers and everything else like that, I think really caught him in the ass. And that's where the feature creep came up and everything else like that. So yeah. I think a lot of these companies just don't know how to adapt to the way that they need to do business. And so they're kind of going with this whole, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. And that's what Square's done with the management of Final Fantasy. Let's get all these people that can make really pretty shit to make a bunch of pretty shit. And then maybe we can come up with a game for it.
Yeah.
So... I mean, and God, look at what they did with Kingdom Hearts. I mean, especially now, like over the last 10 years, I mean, Kingdom Hearts, we could have been on Kingdom Hearts like 9 by now. And it would have made so much money because of how much Disney has been doing over the last few years as far as their IP. And then the stuff with Pixar and everything else like that. I mean, this could have been printing money, but nobody had any foresight about how to actually do it.
Yeah.
And same thing. It was just like, well, can we make a game out of this? I mean, hell, half the Final Fantasy games, the plots don't even make any damn sense. So it's not like they need to forge a plot around the game. So,
yeah. Well, I think we've pretty much beaten that one into the ground. Yeah.
Give me Chrono Trigger 2.
Yes. No. No. Well, that's enough, as we both said. Yeah. All right.
And I can't even be mad because now they're finally bringing Dragon Quest over after being such teases about it. But even still, like, I feel like the only reason that the Dragon Quest games for the 3DS are coming over is because they've got nothing else to do. And it's already there.
Yeah.
But I'll still take it.
Yeah. it's like an abusive relationship. It's like, you know they're going to hurt you. But...
And Square's always sitting there like, come on, baby, I can change. I'm like, I don't believe you, Square. And they're like, yeah, but how you wanted Dragon Quest 9, or excuse me, Dragon Quest 8 and 7 on the 3DS? I'll do that for you, baby. I won't hurt you again. And I'm like, oh, I believe you. But I know I'm only going to end up on the floor with a black eye. Yeah. So
called Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, and it's just going to be... I know they're going to let me down.
Yeah.
But they got what I want.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So, yeah.
They're going to get those old games out to you.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, they're going to basically, they're pulling the nostalgia as the reason to get back together. Remember how many good times we had? Remember how you enjoyed that one thing at that one time in that one place? We can do that again.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about fighting games. Pat, you want to start us off with this NK story?
Yeah. Machinima and the CW are teaming up to bring Mortal Kombat 10 tournament play to national television. Mortal Kombat 10 being the focal point of this season of Chasing the Cup. And basically it's going to be following a bunch of top players, Perfect Legend, Sonic Fox, Biohazard's on the list, you know, on the way to the ESL Pro League finals.
Hmm.
So,
now are they, is this going to be like straight up like actual coverage, or will there be like a number of challenges?
I think it's going to be actual coverage limited to those players.
Okay.
It's kind of like a reality show that...
Just following them around.
Yeah. Hmm. That's what I gather.
Hmm.
But it is going to... It's still going to put high-level MK10 on national TV, and that's definitely a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't really disagree there. It's like, yeah, the CW is not exactly the first network I would think of, but, well.
We'll take it.
Yeah. Then again, you know, they are kind of a smaller network, and
yeah,
they're kind of skewed.
The CW at this point, with like what they're doing with their their superhero stuff. I mean, they seem relatively willing to take chances. So this seems mm-hmm. to be sort of like a step in that same direction. Because, I mean, I don't know if you guys – I don't know how many of you guys actually watch any of this stuff. But they're doing basically like the Justice League because – like a sort of an alternate Justice League called Legends of Tomorrow because DC won't let them do the real Justice League. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys have actually watched Arrow. It is the most bootleg, like, wannabe Batman mm-hmm. that they could have produced simply because they can't have Batman.
Yeah.
So they do seem like they are willing to take chances, though, which I think is really cool. And although it's kind of funny, like with MK, though, right? Like, that's a funny game to do this with.
Yeah.
Because it's not exactly easy on the eyes as far as, like, so, you know, how are they going to display this stuff? Is just fatalities going to get cut out? Are they going to
– probably.
You know, they're going to find a version with the blood code. I mean, how are they going to do this? You know, that's mm-hmm. the stuff that I'm curious about. Because could you – I could totally imagine the backlash. Like, somebody gets on to watch, like, The Flash or something with their kids, and then they see Scorpion, like, rip someone's kidneys out.
Yeah.
You know, that would be... make it one of Devorah's fatalities. Oh, let's go for the gold here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be not, it's not going to be the most pleasant thing in the world.
No.
But it's good to see him doing it. I think they're, you know, they know this is coming. So.
Yeah. This is going to be, you know, pretty interesting to follow. So. And the more coverage that fighting games
and Mortal Kombat 10 is really one of the most watchable fighting games around right now.
No, it is. Mm-hmm. It's also incredibly fun to play. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
The timing's really good with season two right around the corner.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the XL edition that's about to drop.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I won't buy.
That probably has a lot to do with it, actually.
Yeah. Which I won't buy because I've already got the original, so I'll just get the extra characters. Yeah. Anyway. KI, season 3.
We have the Kim Woo trailer now.
Yep.
Looks fantastic. I love the shout out to Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes.
She has a freaking dragon.
Yeah, she's got a dragon. So, yeah, she's a design student. Okay.
I think it more or less confirms that what we're dealing with is a reboot rather than a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Looks really good. And I'm glad that people responsible for the music are still holding it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still this is more solid. Of a direct remix than a lot of stuff we've been hearing.
Yeah.
I also noticed that she specifically mentioned beating down on Gargus. So that may have been an explicit confirmation that he's on the way.
Yeah. Whether he's on the way as a boss or as a playable character still remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it wouldn't be unsurprising for them to put in just a boss character.
That's true.
Yeah.
Then again, everything that they've stuck in the game so far has ended up playable in one way or another. So
yeah, even Shadow Jago has been toned down, I would say.
Yeah. So later on yesterday, after the Kim Woo trailer got out, another video surfaced that probably should have been the stinger at the end of that one, but instead it was a standalone tease of the Arbiter.
Hmm.
So another guest character on the way. For those keeping score, that's Tusk, Kim Woo, Rash, Arbiter, and in one form or another, undoubtedly Gargus.
Yeah. So that leaves one, possibly two more slots to fill.
Well, I would say three, because each season has been eight characters so far, hasn't it?
Six to eight, I think. Yeah, it's eight.
Yeah.
So three.
Season one was six right away, and then two later, and then season two was just eight of them staggered.
Yeah.
By about a month each. So.
Yeah. So we're running out of original roster characters now, so...
Yeah, I think Season 3 has to be it for this game, because they knocked it out of the park for original characters in Season 2. They did a fantastic job with it.
Yeah.
But I don't want them to get around to Season 4, Season 5, and basically basically turning it into Mugen Light, where, okay, who can we plug into this game next?
Yeah.
I don't want to see Killer Instinct become that. And
I would like to see Conker in there. Just saying.
That actually would be pretty entertaining.
I think Iron Galaxy could pull it off.
I have an open mind about that. But my general distaste toward guest characters in general just kind of, yeah.
Well, I mean, we've already got Rash in there, so
yeah.
Either the other characters are Zitz and Pimple, which I highly doubt they're going to do, or they're going to do original characters or other guest characters to round out the roster for season 3.
I'm hoping the other three are going to be straight up original characters.
Mm. Mm.
We'll see what happens, but
yep.
Because at this point, they've got pretty much the entire cast of Killer Instinct 1 and 2
yep.
on deck now.
Yeah, apart from Idol and Gorgos, but so there's that. Anyway, we don't have to wait very long because season 3 kicks off in March.
Mm.
Yep. I know I'll be there.
Yep. Buy that Ultra Edition, whatever the hell they end up calling it.
So, oh, I want to see what they... there's got to be something awesome that they're just hanging on to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is it weird that we're effectively paying 3 times for this game, and I'm totally okay with it?
Well, that's what happens when you do it well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this new modern take on Killer Instinct has been a masterpiece from minute one.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, Microsoft and their associated studios deserve every penny they're getting out of it.
Yeah.
See, I'm not one of those people. I think it's a fun game, but I'm actually kind of like, yeah, I'm not going to give these guys $180. But, I mean, I see how it works and I see why, especially like, particularly the way that it was designed, like why it works the way that it does. And I think it's great, but my concern with it is, and I think we're going to see this more as well, is that this idea that you can't have a fighting game be successful unless it has, $180 worth of revisions, is bothersome. And, to be fair, I mean, we saw that with all the Street Fighters. We have all the different versions of 4 and all that stuff. Like, I know that's sort of the iterative process of this genre in general. And, I'm not blind to that, especially with, people wanting to keep it, going and keep people invigorated and all that stuff. But it's one of those things where I know so much is coming down the pipe that it kind of has me almost like, I'll just wait until whatever the super duper whiz bang XL ultra whatever edition comes out, and then that's when I'll play. And then if I get in at that point, I probably won't even like it. So I think the exception for me will be Street Fighter V. But with anything else, like with the MK stuff and all that, just knowing what they were doing and all the different versions that were coming out, I just wasn't even interested. I didn't even buy it. So, and I only have Killer Instinct because they gave it away with games and gold.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where just that model, I can totally see why it works and why it's sort of necessary, but it's not something that I can buy into.
Yeah, it's also a model that was designed for a different Xbox One.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be a, online only, free to play, suck all the money out of you type thing, and they had to ratchet back a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
And well, the underpinnings of that are still there, and they can't really change it at this point. So.
Right, nope. And I think that's probably part of it too for me.
Yeah,
but the thing is that I don't know if any of you guys read Wired, but Chris Kohler had a really interesting article that he put up a couple of days ago. I don't know when he put it on the site. But one of the things that he talked about was like one of the reasons you're not hearing about people complaining about used games anymore is because we're basically dealing with two types of games right now. We're dealing with free-to-play games that are designed around whales, or we're dealing with games that have some sort of booster system that gets you to buy into more money. or excuse me, get you to buy into their ecosystem and pour more money into it. Like he brought up like Assassin's Creed with Syndicate, where you can basically, you know, buy stuff so you can level up. And we've seen this, you know, in games before, but it is seems like it's, you know, sort of becoming the norm now. And what I thought the interesting point that he brought up was is now you're not going to demonize your friend for lending this game to someone, because the chances are is that whoever they lent the game to is going to open up their wallet. And then they're going to, you know, they're going to throw 30 down for you or whatever, depending on whatever your current monetary model is. Mm. And so I thought about that too while you guys were discussing this with Killer Instinct, because it's kind of like, yeah, because it definitely was designed supposed to be free to play, just like you said, Phil, but it's just one of those things, like we're seeing that creep into look at MK, you know, look at Mortal Kombat, look at what is going on with Destiny and all of this stuff. I mean, you know, now Destiny is like, yeah, get your $30 boost in and not even dealing with the shit that's actually plaguing the game. Like, that stuff bothers me. And I just can't buy into something like that because I feel like that I'm part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that game was the only one
aspect
of why
people would or would not go in on a fighting game with this kind of with this kind of business model depends largely on how they're going to be playing it. Like, if you're just going to like sit down and go through the single player and maybe do some casuals with your friends on a Saturday night or something, then you're probably going to be more likely to hold out for that deluxe pack or Mortal Kombat XL in that case.
Right. Well, it just feels like it's front end design to change my $60 into $90. Because and I think that's part of it too that bothers me, is because there's not going to be, and Pat, you and I, you know this. I mean, we've been involved with fighting game community for forever. You don't have a game where there's 16 characters and you only do 12. You got to get the 16. Otherwise, you're at a disadvantage. And so anytime these new characters come out, you know, you're sort of, if you want to be remotely competitive, you're buying into it. And and that's fine. I mean, that's, and you know what? And maybe it's, I'm also feeling this way simply because, I mean, I'm not competitive anymore. I don't play that way. So it doesn't matter to me very much. But you better believe that if I was a person that was like, okay, I need to be able to know all the matchups, I need to know all this stuff, you know, you're going to be able to turn my $60 into $90, and every $5 or $10 or $20, anything that you put out, I'm going to jump into because I want to remain competitive. And I get it, but it just doesn't work for me with where I'm at.
Yeah, I was going to say, if the more competitive player takes that approach and waits until, you know, whatever later edition of the game comes out, they're going to get their hands on it and they're going to be, you know, a year or two behind the rest of the pack as far as as far as having their skills in order.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy that was Killer's Instinct was the only game of that launch that was filled with microtransactions that actually worked. Everything else failed.
Yeah.
The golf game, the Crimson Dragon,
Rise.
Well, I mean, but I think a big reason it did work though is it is a good game.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I would say that, you know, arguably some of those other ones are not nearly as good.
So, Crimson Dragon.
Yeah, it could have been, but it wasn't.
Yeah,
they got the support that Killer Instinct did.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
God damn it, Cortana! I wasn't talking to you.
You have to save the universe.
Yeah, she just like opened up a web search for no apparent reason.
It's probably like, I see you guys are talking shit about Killer Instinct.
Yeah. And speaking of talking, it looks like Oda has been talking quite a bit lately, Pat.
Yasuyuki Oda has sort of, he's embraced his role as SNK's Ono. And with Taipei Game Show having gone down just recently, and the new trailer for King of Fighters 14, he's been answering a lot of questions really up front about King of Fighters 14 and what SNK's plans overall are for it. There have been some pretty interesting revelations there. I love that they're putting the emphasis on the online, because you have to do that now. And, you know, the problems with King of Fighters 13's online were well documented. I thought it was interesting that SNK might actually host something, you know, their equivalent to Capcom Cup or something of that nature. That's way different than the SNK that we've known all these years.
Yeah. It also kind of tells me that King of Fighters 14 is not going to be the only thing going on with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they've already said they're going to work on Samurai Showdown at one point or another here pretty soon. And this is more or less a continuation of the team that dissolved when SNK initially went out of business back in 2000. And so this studio is, it's basically the King of Fighters 99 team with some new additions, because there obviously, with as many intervening years as there have been, there's going to be some turnover. But there seems to be absolutely no common threads between the King of Fighters 13 team and what's going on here. This is SNK R&D 1. And I can't tell you how happy that makes me.
Yep. Will come out in the Neo Geo.
You know, if it is, I'm ready.
Yeah, $400.
Yep.
And I would buy the cartridge.
Yeah. So there's that. You have anything else to say that it was pretty interesting?
Oh, well, let's see. I'm going over some of this stuff now, because there's like three articles of stuff that he's talked to various outlets.
Yeah, he's been busy.
He talked to Gamer B and RB at Taipei Game Show, and then he talked to Shoryuken, and I think there was something with Madman's Cafe or Dream Cancel, one of those KOF sites I'm not finding at the moment. It will be the start of a new story arc.
Yeah, it's going to be a more approachable type of KOF game from what he's saying. But
which is consistent with the fact that this is, once again, more or less the KOF 99 team.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're starting with KOF 99 as a base for your gameplay, you've already got a very solid foundation.
Yeah.
So
even more so if you dial it back one more year, because that was King of Fighters 98, and that's still played today.
Yeah.
They really want it to go back to sort of the roots of KOF and the basic mechanics, and not think of it as so much of an over-the-top combo game as 13 was.
Yeah, and that's what ended up putting me off of that game.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you've got a 3-frame window to get this combo in? Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Which is still better than a 1-frame window that Street Fighter 4 gives you. Yeah. I'm glad that era in the genre is coming to an end.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of goes back to our discussion of feature creep earlier on. It's just this kind of mechanics and stuff that, you know, accrue over the years, and sometimes it just takes a producer going, you know what, this isn't really working. So. Yeah.
And I like what he said about the roster size and how they got 50 characters. And he just straight up said, you cannot have a true King of Fighters game without having a massive fucking roster. That was... I'm paraphrasing, of course, but...
Yeah.
I mean, the links are there in the show notes. I highly recommend just going over them. They're really good reads. Yep. And, you know, on closing on that, I just want to say I love what Oda's doing. He's... You know, this is an era where every game needs their sort of studio producer face making themselves available to the players, and Oda's doing a great job of doing a great job of serving that role for SNK with the King of Fighters 14.
Yeah. I'm stoked. I want to see what this game has to offer when it comes out. Yeah.
Pretty sure it's not on pace for first quarter anymore, but you know, we'll be occupied.
Yeah. It'll be playable at Evo, no doubt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about Street Fighter V, because some stuff came out for that this week. Yep.
Surprise beta.
Yeah. It's just, hey, here's a beta. Thanks.
we played the crap out of that.
Yeah. Hopefully it's going to still be going on when we finish recording. I want to get a few more matches in before it closes. Yeah. We also got word of a cinematic story mode, which is apparently going to be a first for the series, that they're actually just going to add drop in later as a free update.
Yeah,
looks like they've been paying attention to what's been. Looks like what they've been paying attention to what's been going on with the Mortal Kombat games.
Yeah,
and they also had the wisdom to know that it wasn't worth delaying the game over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, the game already has its own kind of story mode that goes along with it. It's just kind of a basically the traditional type story mode that was in 4.
Yeah.
That's going to be in there.
So it looks like either Shadaloo or the Illuminati or whatever are going to be putting out some sort of big satellite type thing that's going to like block out the sun and cause some kind of power outage or something.
Hmm. Yeah, and the only way to stop it is to punch each other in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense games to me.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense that someone like Ryu, who walks on like glass and punches waterfalls, would be able to take out a conglomerate that's bent on world domination.
Yeah.
Because
you would just run into them in the street and go, hey, you look evil.
Yeah.
Still no confirmation.
It'd suck if it was ruled by logic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
this is like a martial arts type story. Martial arts type stories, the laws of physics don't apply.
Yeah.
It's called rules?
Yes. We still know confirmation of who the last boss is, and I still think it's going to be Gil and Uriel's mother. So.
I think it's going to be Bison's beard.
Urien.
Urien's. Yeah, Gil and Urien are related, apparently.
Yeah, they're brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they share the same thumb.
Yeah. Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that interesting mental image, I'll move along to something Ono's else that Ono's been saying.
Yeah, Ono's been doing a lot of talking in his own right. One of the more interesting comments was that the subject of Street Fighter III was brought up, and somebody, I guess, wondered if there was going to be some kind of major roster turnover at some point or another, maybe with the next iteration of the game or something. What something similar to Street Fighter III, where almost the entire roster was thrown out and replaced. Ono says that's not happening as long as he's involved.
Yeah, I doubt they'll ever do that again.
Yeah, and that went over so well before.
Yeah. And considering how successful Street Fighter has been on his watch, he's probably going to be involved for a very long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with the buzz that Street Fighter V is getting currently, you know, they don't really want to screw it up by just removing a whole bunch of characters that people actually liked and replacing them with weird-ass mutants.
12.
Yeah, 12.
Moro.
So, yeah. So, what's the going to be the release date?
February 16th.
February 16th. Mark your calendars, folks.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm already pre-ordered.
Yep. It's only another couple weeks.
Yeah, a little over 2 weeks. That Tuesday of of that week. So that's going to be fun. Looking forward to it. Apparently, I'm also getting a comic book from Amazon, which is interesting. So
I think it's going to be from, isn't it, Mudan?
Yeah. Well,
that makes sense.
So, yeah. It's going to be pretty cool.
And Morono says he envisions a 6-year evolving lifespan for the game.
Yeah.
Now, if that means the characters are just going to be coming at a steady pace for that 6 years, that puts them on pace for 52 characters.
Yeah, which is, well, that's a good number. That's a pretty high number for as far as a Street Fighter character goes.
It surpasses Capcom versus SNK2. It surpasses Ultra Street Fighter 4. It almost goes into Marvel versus Capcom 2 territory, which is ridiculous.
So now we got to remember, like, what other characters could they put in here besides completely new ones?
Well, they could go back to the well for.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's a ton of them. Any Capcom character they could look at as ancillary from Final Fight or anything else like that they could put in.
Yeah, they can get Guy back in there, and he would actually make sense.
Abigail.
Abigail.
And there's no question what his V-trigger would be. He just turns red and smears you on the wall.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
That's it. What else could we have in there? Well, you could probably bring back some of the less weird characters from 3, like Dudley.
Well, yeah,
he was in 4, and I don't think he got a lot of play, so maybe they won't. A lot of
4 retreads could be in there.
They'd probably look at the data, though, and see.
The fact that they're 4 retreads makes them bad choices, but.
I mean, the fact that we're getting Charlie is, like, you know, whatever he is now.
Yeah.
They'll do that.
That's the piping right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to get, if you're going to have Charlie in there, Guile's going to have to show up at some point.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, too, is that, you know, I think what they'll probably do at some point, too, is throw out the whatever the storyline is, and they'll just go, hey, we're going to give you, like, a classic version of this character. You know, I could see them doing something like that. Or here's the alpha version, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, turn it into a, you know, like, Hyper Street Fighter 2 type thing, where you could basically choose whatever iteration of the character you wanted.
Right, exactly.
Mm. Yeah, I'd be okay with that. But that's still a long ways off because game's just coming out. Yeah.
Although I do think that there will be iterative major updates, even though it's all being built around the base game.
I think
there will be major update events, if you will, that are tantamount to the release of, say, a Super Street Fighter 5 or something of that nature.
Yeah. They already said
I don't think the game would be sustainable if you didn't.
Yeah.
Darkstalkers characters.
Not sure how that'd go, honestly.
Well, they wouldn't be able to work it story-wise, but, you know, if you go to something like, an Ultra version or whatever, then it doesn't, story is kind of, all bets are off at that point.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You played Capcom Fighting Evolution with me when it came out on the Xbox way back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember my application of Jetta and his wheel of fuckage?
Yes.
You broke the game. Unleash that upon Street Fighter V?
Not particularly.
Yeah, that's true.
But
I still think though that someone like Felicia or Morgan would actually work pretty well if you could figure it out.
Felicia would be balanced enough, I suppose. Morrigan, we already have Shoto's.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But I just can't wait for the game to come out in 2 weeks so I can get it and then devote the rest of my life to it.
And start immediately accumulating fight money so we're ready for the first DLC character in March.
Yeah,
I think that seriously, all the talk of Street Fighter V and everything, I think the fact that you earn fight money is the fucking funniest thing. Just because of my fight money, like, that is just great.
Yeah.
The currency you earn is,
that's what it's a reference to.
No, I know it is, but that's one of those, like, I'm at this point in my life where certain, kind of like what I'm doing, I get a lot of joy out of really small things. And that's one of those where I'm like, oh, yeah, That's just great. Yep. Because other people might be like, oh, it makes sense. I mean, you're fucking fighting and there's fight money and all that. It's like,
that was one of the best things that Street Fighter 4 gave us.
Yep.
Yep.
That and Profound Sadness.
Right. Yeah, that might be the only good thing it gave us. But yeah, that's one of those things where I'm like, oh, that's just fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Rufus as a DLC character. No, no thanks.
No.
Nope. Do not need.
You can get Birdie on a diet. Like low carb Birdie.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the Alpha 2 version.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing Eagle make a comeback, honestly.
Hell yes.
He was an interesting character in CBS.
I think too. We might actually see quite a bit of
Gekki.
Yeah.
Gekki in Street Fighter 1.
Yeah.
I can get some alternate skins. You can get some Mike Bison going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I call that the confusion back.
Judging by some of the sketch work we've seen, they are going completely mad with alternates.
Yeah.
Mm. Good revenue stream.
Yeah.
Cannot if it's not all done in fight money.
Yeah, and that's going to actually be an option. So,
but it's a nice mechanic because it's like it's almost like they're paying you to play the game.
Yeah, and you know, fight money is going to be.
And I say that with no cynicism whatsoever. I think it's great that the most dedicated players are getting an arrangement that allows them to get DLC for free just through their dedication to the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and there won't be like there's not going to be any wasted modes either, you know.
Yeah.
Apart from training, where you don't really make any fight money, but you know everything in the single player and all of the online, that's all going to count towards fight money.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm. God, that movie was so freaking stupid, but it was so much fun.
Yeah. All right. So you want to move on to EVO 2016 stupidity?
Yeah. So, I mean, the lineup, it got announced this week. The problems with it are few but profound. And before I go into this, we'll just
go over the lineup itself.
Recap the lineup itself. So you've got Street Fighter V, Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Tekken 7, Faded Retribution, so it will be the update, Mortal Kombat 10, Killer Instinct, presumably Season 3. I'm not sure what the character situation is going to be as of EVO, but they're usually really good to set their character bans sensibly.
Yeah.
Make sure that everyone who's playable has had enough time in the competitive pool so that everyone knows their matchups and everything. And here's where it gets dicey. Super Smash Bros. Melee, Super Smash Bros. 4, and Pokken Tournament.
On the one hand, I kind of applaud them for, you know, at least having all of the updated versions in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like
they'll be ready Revelator. To go, so you want to do it.
Yeah. But yeah, three. Well, two Smash games and Pokken Tournament. Jeez, a little bit.
Yeah, I think they really dropped the ball by not forcing the Smash community to pick a game.
Mm.
You know, I don't care if it's Smash 4 or Smash Melee, but. This is EVO we're talking about. There's only 9 spots. I'm of the opinion that Smash probably should have never been let in the first place. You know, don't let them occupy 2 out of 9 spots. That's just ridiculous, especially when Street Fighter, which is another matter entirely, is only taking up 1.
Hmm.
So, definitely one of the problems there is actually having to run 2 Smash games. As for Pokken Tournament, I would support its presence at EVO if it wasn't for the really weird controller situation that game has. And I'm okay, not sure. I don't sure.
even understand how they managed to screw this up.
So, okay. Player one can only use the Wii U gamepad. Only player one can use the Wii U gamepad. Now, those are two separate statements. And when you put them together, that flies in the face of every tournament sensibility that, you know, exists. And I don't know if there's, if this is something that Namco Bandai is going to have the opportunity to fix in time for Evo, but I think if it goes unresolved, then Pokken Tournament is absolutely in question.
Hmm. Yeah, this is just dumb, considering, if I recall right, the Wii U has two USB ports.
Yep. And Pokken Tournament has a fantastic pack-in controller that only the second player can use.
Yeah, what? It's got to be some sort of weird technical restriction of the Wii U or something, because I don't think any developer would arbitrarily limit it like that. There's got to be something stupid with the Wii U, and probably why a lot of developers have probably shied away from this system, because it's just weirdness like that.
Have there been sticks on the Wii U before?
No.
Ooh, that's a good question. No, I think there was a Tekken Tag Tournament 2 stick.
Hmm. Yeah, there was. And you could play as player one with that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So yeah. This is Namco.
Hmm. I have. Hmm. It's just. I don't get it. I don't know. Don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Say all you want.
No, I'm not going to say anything. I'll tell you guys offline, but I'm not going to say anything on the show.
Hmm. Fair enough.
So, I think unless something changes with Pokken Tournament, that game is going to end up dropping off the list. And I would think in order to have as diverse an Evo as possible, you'd have to drop one of the Smash games. How the hell do you leave out Ultra Street Fighter 4? Now, I hate that fucking game. Let me be absolutely clear on that. I can't stand Street Fighter 4 in general. But that has been the number one game at Evo year after year after year. It gets the best hype. You know, it brings people to Vegas. Yes, Street Fighter V is going to be out by then, but who cares? You know, that Street Fighter at its best is when everyone's got their own game that they can gravitate towards. The scene was at its best when you were running Super Turbo, Alpha 2, Alpha 3, Third Strike. You know, you had so many events that ran all of those. And you're going to tell me that you can't get Street Fighter 5 and Ultra Street Fighter 4 in Evo?
Hmm. Yeah, then you can get two Smashes in there. Come on. Yeah. I don't know.
It just smacks of dicked up priorities to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You guys see that arena?
Mm.
Oh, how they're moving Sunday finals to another venue entirely?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's morphing into this weird, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like all corporate now. It's not. It doesn't feel like
it's esports. Aggress.
Yeah, it's esports. Yeah,
it's basically what we spent so many years resisting, kicking and screaming.
The thing is that when you look at the people that watch this stuff, when you look at the streamers and everything, these are people that don't even play the games. I mean, essentially. I can't
stand stream monsters.
Well, I can't either, but they're the people that are propping this stuff up.
Yeah.
So, you know, in regards to this, I mean, this is, with the advent of streams and everything else that's happened, this is the next natural step, is that there are going to be a ton of people in that arena that don't even play.
Yeah,
they're just gonna if they're gonna be out in Vegas and they're gonna go see their friends, or they might have a passing interest, but they're gonna go there to be part of the spectacle, you know. In the same way that you have people that go to boxing matches that have never been hit in the face,
yeah,
you know, this is essentially going to be the end game for what happened with fighting games. So, and it's certainly not going to change. Well, I mean, it is what it is, but
yeah, I know.
You know, this is what it's going to be. So, and it's probably only going to get bigger because, you know, we're at the point where they're not going to ignore Evo anymore. They're not going to, you know, all these, look at what Capcom is.
Yeah. Doing. They're getting on ESPN. You got to give them a shout out for that.
Yeah. I mean, this is the natural pace of things. Once corporate comes in and everything else, you know, this is the way it works and this is where it's at. And I would not be surprised if part of that Evo lineup is money.
Yeah.
I mean, let's, and not money as in like someone like, you know, Mr. Wizard is like pocketing it. It's, you know, who can we get involved in this that's going to bring us the most eyeballs that then is going to bring us the more money that will then have Capcom and everybody else taking us more serious. I mean, do you guys remember just a few years ago, Nintendo tried to shut down people playing Smash at Evo?
Yep.
You know?
Nintendo almost got Smash taken out of Evo, and I was laughing the entire time.
Yeah. Whereas now, look at this is transforming. I mean, you have something like Pokken or whatever the hell it's called. You know, it's going to be their, you know, first dibs. So, part of me feels like it's there for sort of the sport of it. You know, like, you know, for instance, we're going to have Tekken 7 at Final Round. I know we're going to have some stuff there that nobody else is, and that's mainly because Atlanta has always, and the Southeast in general, has always been really a Tekken town. In a Tekken area, so.
And I love that about you guys.
Yeah, I feel like that's being done because it's being done for the fans. I feel like something like the two Smash games and things like that are being done because there are two groups of people that refuse to play both games. And Evo is trying to cater to those people because it also means more eyeballs are going to be looking. I mean, I don't know if you guys have really ever been to Smash tournaments. I mean, those guys are rabid. It's nuts. I mean,
I've begrudgingly attended Smash tournaments while playing other games.
There is a Smash tournament that is held by a comic book store down the street from me in this hole in the wall, and they regularly get 100 people. Mm. And it's in a place that should not have more than 30 people in it. I mean, there and that's just one that's happening out of like the 15 that happened in my area. I mean, there are a lot of eyeballs behind Smash, and that's why the two games are there. You know, they're not going to tell them to pick a game because those are all people that are going to be watching the streams and everything and buying merchandise and all that stuff, you know. And then that turns around and that gets places like, you know, Evo bigger sponsorships and gets companies like Nintendo to cooperate with them. So it's sort of like a necessary evil / sleeping with the enemy kind of thing because of where fighting games are going.
Mm. Yep.
It's just sad because I remember a time when they told MLG to piss off.
Yeah.
But following that logic as well, I still, you know, all the more reason that why did they take Ultra Street Fighter 4 down? Because that is one of those big games, even now.
It wouldn't surprise me if that was a Capcom thing. You know, Capcom is vested in getting eyeballs on Street Fighter V, not having people stick with Street Fighter IV and something that they already own. Especially with Ono seems to be very about the fans, and you better believe that he's not going to be in the position he is if 4 doesn't move numbers, especially with Sony, you know, and the exclusivity and everything else like that. So, you know, I think that's part of it too. You know, there's a lot of deals for this stuff to happen, and there is a lot of money on the line. So, again, this is not being critical of anybody that's behind it, but I really truly believe that the majority of this has to do with money because of the way all of this stuff works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And finally, I guess we'll move on to our last story, which is Sony is shuffling deck chairs.
Yeah.
SCE is restructuring into Sony Interactive Entertainment and changing the name around and What's looks like it. Andrew House still head of the whole group. No, so not really much has changed there.
Oh, he's also taken control of the third party relations as well.
Yeah, so what's Shu Yoshida doing?
He's reporting to Sean Layden for the Worldwide Studios part.
So
essentially those two will be in charge of all of the internal studios. Then Jim Ryan, who was head of the SCEE, the Europe operations, is now just on global sales marketing. So he got probably the biggest demotion, essentially.
So is Gio Corsi still the third-party relations guy?
Yeah, I think Adam Boyes and all of his people are still doing their thing. I think they're keeping everybody. I think they're just trying to organize it so that the hardware and the software and all the relations people are all under one umbrella, sort of able to better function as a whole.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm guessing we won't see the full fruits of this stuff until next gen.
Well,
at this point,
I figure we'll probably start to see at least some of this pay off, like maybe next year, late next year, probably start to see some of the results of this.
As far as like PSN upgrades, I think you're not going to see that until probably next gen and all the hardware stuff they're going to be able to do. Now they got all those people together.
There's a part of me that just isn't a fan of the new name because for some reason, just I associate the Sony Computer Entertainment name with what I still regard as the highest point of the PlayStation brand, which was the PS2. And so that that's just a personal quirk, but it's there.
Yeah,
it's just the name.
Yeah, it's his name. They're streamlining things, you know. They were a little bit too segmented before. It was hard. It was hard for you know, things to get done because there were so many departments to go around in. So, yeah, I think this will probably end up being a good thing overall, even though
it
looks a little weird at the moment.
Yeah, the whole thing is also headquartered out of California, so now they've gotten that part of it finally moved out of Japan.
Yeah. Which makes sense because, you know, a big part of PlayStation's audience is in North America. So
that's where the bulk of their development is at, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds more like a studio decision.
Yeah.
That way, so all of their, you know, Naughty Dog,
Sucker Punch,
San Diego, Santa Monica,
all those guys are now right next to where the people in charge are going to be at.
All right. Well, looks like that's going to be pretty much do it for this episode of the Day Zero update. I'd like to remind everybody that if you're not subscribed to the show, you can do so on iTunes or via TuneIn Radio. TuneIn has apps on the Xbox One and Android, iOS, so you can pretty much get us wherever you want. We're going to be available on the Google Play market at some point, whenever Google decides to turn that on. Other than that, feel free to check us out there. And with that, I'm Filippo Genolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
We'll see you all next week.